everyone, and welcome to our Sustainability Spotlight series, where this week we will be focusing on the retail industry. I am truly delighted to be joined by three brands who are truly setting themselves up to be environmentally fit for the future. They're also three of our brilliant FIFO customers. So I've got Lisa Worley-Smith, Head of Brand and Marketing at EcoEgg, Karen Wardilove, Head of Communications and Collaborations at Amara Living, and Merrin Chilcott, Sustainability and Technical Manager at Bamboo Clothing. Welcome, ladies. I'll give you a chance to say hi and introduce yourself in 1 minute. But I think we can all recognise that consumer attitudes towards the environment are massively changing. And in fact, research reveals that shoppers are making choices already based on environmental factors. And so why we're here today is to learn how brands like yourselves are ensuring that their offering is seen as contributing towards a greener future and how important that is if they want to be successful. So ladies, welcome to the podcast. Please introduce yourselves to the audience. Lisa, do you want to say hi?
Hello, hello. I'm Lisa from EcoEgg and I look after the EcoEgg brand and also all of our marketing. Mostly the channel that I'm kind of working most on is our online sales, so from ecoegg.com. So, yeah, that's me.
Brilliant. Welcome to the podcast today. Karen from Amara Living.
Hi there, everyone. Thank you, Nicola and FIFO, for having me here. My name is Karen, and I head up collaborations and communications at Amara.com. We're an online interior retailer, purely online. That's about it as an intro, I think.
Brilliant. Thank you. And Merrin?
Hiya, thanks for having me as well. I'm Merrin from BAM, I look after all things sustainability and technical. My background is sort of garment technology, and I joined BAM about 3.5 years ago and have been kind of driving our sustainability agenda since then as well. So my big focus is our big ambition to become impact positive by 2030. So that's what I'm really focused on day to day. So yeah, thanks for having me.
No, absolutely welcome. And I love those sort of big targets that you're setting out right at the beginning there, Merrin. I think it tees up everything that we're going to talk about today and the objectives that many of our retailers are looking to achieve as well, sort of from supply chains to material choices to packaging and those long-term goals. I'm really looking forward to listening to what you guys have got to say. So let's jump straight in. Karen, maybe a question for you to kick us off. What does the idea of sustainability and being green actually mean for Amara Living and your customers?
Good question. I think it can mean a lot of things to a lot of people. And obviously, as an international business as well, there's a lot of people that have opinions in this area. But for us as a business, we're working at the moment across all our areas of touch points. So from packaging to our electricity provider. And at the moment, we are just in the throes of mapping out our compliance of the Modern Slavery Act, as well as sort of putting into some targets around carbon footprint. We've got a long way to go just because of the type of our business. We supply and provide all the brands that you see on our website, Roberto Cavalli and Mazzoni and the like. So we have to go through all of those supply chains to ensure they're clean, to make sure that all our messaging is on point and it's transparent and factually correct. We're in the throes of doing all that and hope to have a statement up regarding all of those points later on this year, hopefully in the next month or so, in fact.
Fabulous. I love that. And Lisa?
EcoEgg is a small business. We have a range of environmentally friendly laundry products, of which the one that is best known is the Laundry Egg. So it's an environmentally friendly alternative to laundry detergent and fabric conditioner. We launched about 10 years ago, A lot of people haven't heard of us, which is our main issue. But when we launched, the messaging is pretty much still the same as it is today, which is that the product, the laundry egg, is kinder to the environment, kinder to your skin, and kinder to your pocket. Now, obviously, the change in interest in environmentally friendly products has meant that we've become much more of a product that people are searching for, looking for, saying, blimey, you know, why hadn't I found this product before? Everyone should be using it. And what we've done is we've tried to be much more specific about what it means to be sustainable, what it means to be green, what it means to be environmentally friendly. So we've been a lot kind of tighter on the claims that we make. We have specifically looked at ways that we can reduce plastic in terms of our packaging, in terms of our product, in terms of how customers can switch from big plastic bottles of detergent and conditioner to our product, which is just a small laundry egg with mineral pellets inside it. We make quite a lot of plastic claims in terms of how we can help reduce that. We have the endorsement from the Good Housekeeping Institute, which is a kind of getting greener endorsement for reducing plastic. The other thing that we, again, have always stood for is that we don't use harmful chemicals. And by default, that means that what is going down your drain is not full of bleaches and phosphates and enzymes. It's and everything is not harmful to the environment. We've also addressed things like our packaging. We've reduced the amount of cardboard that we use. We've got another product that reduces your energy consumption if you use a tumble dryer. And we've also got a product that you can use in place of a kitchen, of kind of standard kitchen roll. So everything we do is about reducing the impact on the planet. And that's what we're finding our customers want. We have to be super tight with our claims because our customers are becoming more discerning. They're becoming more savvy. So we just make sure that everything we do can be justified, can be proved, can be substantiated, and that we've got kind of tests or certificates to back everything up.
Yeah, it's really important, isn't it? These claims that we make have to be really engaging for our customers and actually really relevant to them. You know, I think consumers struggle to make sort of big changes to their lifestyles, don't they? And they want the brands to empower them and help them make the right environmental choices. Merin, what are your thoughts at BAM?
Yeah, so I mean, I totally agree with the consumer piece, and we as a clothing brand, as I'm sure you're aware, that we have a huge impact, you know, just inherently producing the products that we sell has a massive impact. We also deal with really complicated global supply chains, so the issues that we're dealing with can be really complicated, and trying to communicate those to customers in a really clear non-greenwashy way is a real challenge. It's something that we deal with every day. But probably just a little bit of background about BAM. So BAM was started by Dave back in 2006, and the reason he started it was the you know, similarly to EcoEgg, the whole reason he started the brand was to create a clothing brand that didn't, you know, that kind of put the planet and the people that worked in the supply chain above profits. And when he discovered that bamboo could be made into a fiber that worked really well for kind of active clothing, that was where he saw an opportunity. And we've been kind of growing steadily over the last 16 years, and over the past 15 years, and over the past kind of 3 years, we've seen that shift in consumers' awareness and sustainability, and that's really helped our business to grow, but it's also created even more challenges to make sure that we're being really tight with our claims, making sure that everything we say is credible, and making sure that we still continue to kind of stand out in what is becoming quite a crowded market as someone who's doing sustainability in inverted commas, kind of authentically. So a big focus for us in making sure that we're doing it authentically is measuring everything. We spend a lot of time and a lot of resources measuring our impacts and trying to understand. I mentioned our impact positive ambition earlier, and that covers six key areas of impact, and we try to measure and understand what impact we're having across all of those six key pillars. And then we're working on a multitude of different projects to try and reduce those impacts. And that's kind of our big focus at the moment. And luckily that gives us some quite sort of credible things. You know, we've got the numbers and we've got the data to back up some of the claims we make, which is quite helpful. But I think that can be really important as well.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you've all said there, it's how we enable customers to take positive actions on issues that resonate and will then have the greatest impact on their behavior and then in turn, you know, the planet, because sustainability is increasingly becoming a greater consideration as part of the overall customer experience. And I guess it's how over the years have you seen this develop within your company? You know, how are you doing things differently perhaps to when you started in terms of your focus on sustainability and the impact, I guess, that's having on all that you do? Karen?
Yeah, it's interesting. I've been with Amara for 10, 12 years now, and I've seen quite a radical change, I think, in people's attitude and specifically consumers' attitude to what they want, and it's their demands that are driving it, which is great. I mean, I think, I don't know whether the other girls will agree, but you know, it was only a few years ago that actually, even if you were putting anything or doing sort of products around that sort of eco-friendly or sustainability sort of tags, there wasn't that uplift or interest nearly as much as there is today. Which is, you know, it's all, I think everything that is going in the direction it should do is all very, very positive. The customer is definitely a lot more savvy when it comes to things like this. I think both Lisa and Meryn mentioned it's the consumer needs to have clarity and honesty from brands. It's all very easy for brands, especially in the digital world, to put up statements that say we are this, that and the other, and our carbon footprint is going to be neutral here or there, and but actually to make sure those facts are truly factual, that's where the hard work is. It is really not, I've over the last couple of years been driving everything around the Modern Slavery Act that we're doing and sustainability. It's a lot of work. It really is for businesses, and it's become an almost department in itself, particularly in our business. You know, we've got teams now working on it specifically. You know, our buyers that are buying from globally, it's, the challenge is huge. The supply chain is massive, and you have to check every touch point from the very person that's picking the cotton right through to all the factories that it touches, the courier that delivers it, the warehouse it's sitting in. So it's a big job for lots of companies, but it's so important that everyone takes it very seriously and does deal with it. You know, this is, you know, what we're all here to do. We want life to be better for our future generations. So yeah, it's definitely something that's been driven more by the consumer, certainly from our perspective, you know. And they are specifically asking those questions. They're asking sustainable credentials, and obviously other businesses as well. Instead of being a negative thing, I think it's a really positive thing when a brand that we're working with, whether it is an interior designer who wants to open a trade account or whether it is a brand, an agency that we want to work with, it's so refreshing when people come back and say, right, I want to see your credentials. I want to see where you stand on this viewpoint. I want to see all of those things, and actually making us sign agreements and state our vision and our where we are today. And I think that's really good and positive, and it is definitely getting better.
Yeah, and I think that's so true. As you've touched on there, Karen, it's not only all the suppliers and, you know, and the customers being more aware and more focused on this, it's how brands inherently bring this in internally into their organization is just as critical, you know, to represent. It's not just, as you say, something that you say. You have to live it and breathe it. And you guys are doing such a great job of that. But I think there are so many who don't live that. They just say that they're doing it and they don't. And I think it has to start almost top down from the senior management and the CEO who really passionately believe in it. And obviously that's how EcoEgg and BAM were formed, by people who passionately believed that there was a better way. So Meryn, any thoughts here on how it sort of changed?
I think in terms of the change in consumer behavior, I think definitely we've seen that. And when BAM was first started, there was almost a bit of a, if you were a sustainable brand, people immediately thought that maybe your product wasn't as good, or maybe it was a scratchy hemp shirt, and it wasn't very cool. I think that's when BAM was started, that was kind of where sustainable brands were sitting, that they weren't that cool. And now that has massively changed, and that can only be a good thing. But in terms of, within the business itself, it makes it so much easier when you have a CEO or a founder or, an executive team, senior team that are absolutely behind everything you want to do. And I joined the brand and went from garment technologists through to sustainability manager, because the kind of senior team realized that we needed to put some real resource behind this. I think it's also, as well as having a department or people that are leading that and driving the projects around sustainability, it's just as important for that to filter through to the whole rest of the company, and for every single department within the company to be engaged in the process, because one sustainability manager is not going to change a whole business on their own. Every single person has to do it and buy into it. And to take responsibility for kind of their aspects of the brand, which in a massive organization that's been around for years and is used to doing things a certain way and has a lot of red tape and bureaucracy and all that kind of stuff, it can be really difficult to drive any change. Yep. But we've been so lucky at BAM with a smaller team and with real, David Gordon, our founder, who's just really, really believes in this stuff. And it's thanks to him that we're making some real progress, I think.
Yeah. And obviously, Lisa, you're a slightly smaller organisation in that sense. Do you think it's been easier then to take your customers on a more sustainable journey, or, you know, you still have those challenges and changes that you've seen?
I think, the way I was going to address this question is, what we've found is that we've always held a nice little kind of niche position in the market, which is, if you want a more eco-friendly, environmentally friendly, plastic-reducing, skin-friendly alternative to, the kind of typical, more traditional washing powders and liquids, you'd go to EcoEgg. What we're now finding is that those big boys, you know, the Unilevers of the industry, they're making similar claims. So we're like, oh, okay, so, you know, this product that used to be full of chemicals and not very good for your skin, they're suddenly saying is plant-based, or they've suddenly changed some of their packaging so it becomes more environmentally friendly. You know, our little niche position is now becoming much more kind of mainstream. And by default, and this is, you know, a bit kind of chicken and egg, customers are demanding it, and the bigger players are supplying it. So it's now an expectation that every brand has a kind of sustainable story or environmentally friendly benefits that they can claim. So that actually has been quite hard for us, because that nice little niche position that we used to hold, we're kind of being stampled on a little bit by all the big boys who are making similar claims. So you then have the savvy consumer who says, well, hang on, you know, this brand is making this claim. Is this actually true? You know, can it be substantiated? And so for us, because we won't put any claims on pack that we can't substantiate, it means that we are really strong and confident in what we say, but we still have to build that kind of brand trust. It's actually the reason that we put FIFO on our website, was that we wanted some kind of customer recognition that they love our products, they love our brand. That there's this kind of, you know, perception of, oh, if it's eco-friendly, you know, environmentally friendly, it's not going to work as well. Well, we want to kind of let potential customers know that it does work really well. Here's what people say. Mm. And FIFO allowed us to have that direct customer feedback, you know, honest feedback at the point of purchase, which is at ecoegg.com. So, you know, we get customers who say, I love the fact that I can use this on my son who has eczema, and, you know, I'm not buying any more plastic bottles. And that's there and, you know, come from the mouth of someone that's purchased our products. And it does a great job for us because, you know, people trust what other people say. They don't trust what brands say. And for us, we've spent a long time building that brand trust, making sure we don't put a foot wrong, making sure that, you know, everything that leaves our warehouse does what it says on the box, and we don't make any claims. We do not want to be put into that greenwashing kind of conversation, which a lot of brands are now being questioned. You know, can this brand really claim what they say they can?
It's that level of authenticity, isn't it?
Yeah.
That, you know, the brands who can do that and really show their customers how they're doing that, that they're the ones that will really succeed. And I guess that leads us into another sort of question, which, Lisa, you may be able to continue on, but how do you ensure that these values are across every touch point of a customer journey? So, you know, it goes beyond, I guess, what you sell. For example, you need to make sure your messaging is consistent at every point of interaction that customers have.
Yeah, it's actually really hard because marketing drive the communication, marketing drive the messaging. And, you know, we try and make it the same messaging over and over again and very consistent. We have brand guidelines that we issue to all partners, all countries, all distributors. But policing those kind of brand guidelines can be difficult. We obviously have values that we operate by as a business, which again, we try and instill throughout everything that we do. Every decision that we make as a company should support our brand values. Sometimes, obviously, the financial side kicks in. We are actually a business that's owned by investors, so they're always looking at the bottom line as well. So that could be tricky. Marketing really drive a lot of what really supports the brand. One of the most recent initiatives is we are trying to address everything, which sounds really basic, but we've been away from the office for quite a while. Now we're coming back into the office. We're really looking at more sustainable changes that we can make internally as a business as well. So it's not just for our customers, but we want to be able to show our customers that we're making these changes. We've made a lot of changes. We talk about it, but it's almost like, let's get really, really closer to this business. Let's show them, you know, changing the light bulbs. Let's show them going out and picking up litter from the local riverside, you know? And so we really want to make it a lot more, just real and open and honest.
Become really part of your culture, your company culture.
Yeah.
Lisa, carry on.
I was just going to say, we've just partnered. We were quite lucky to kind of be, well, they contacted us. It's a new app called Greener, and they've partnered with us. And it's an app that allows you to calculate your carbon footprint, and then the app recommends changes. So that's something that we're going to try and address as a business. Again, it's a challenge because there's always kind of other commercial projects that sometimes need to be prioritized as a business. But, you know, marketing try their best to kind of drive these more sustainable initiatives.
Karen.
Yeah, no, I was just going to agree with Lisa. And actually, I think Merrin touched on it earlier, which is the most important thing is it's actually having everyone within the business supporting this and bringing it to the forefront of their minds. It's education. And if you can do that and you've got the support of your staff to drive it forward, because it's not down to one person or one specific team. I mean, we found that with all the work that we're doing that, you know, you have to talk to every single person as an individual on what they're doing, whether it is as you say, about light bulbs or our electricity provider. So it touches everyone within the business. And I think if you can get that passion across and people understand why you're doing it and how you're doing it, then that's got to be good for everyone, right? I mean, you know, if they can take that out into the big world as well with those sorts of ethics and understanding, it's going to change their mindset and their consumer habits as well. So I think all of these things we do, you know, it's lots of small things, but they will ultimately make a big difference.
And I was thinking about this, Karen, is it that, you know, when you're interviewing people for jobs and things, do you even, you know, talking about getting it ingrained in your company culture, do you even ask them about their sort of sustainability practices, or is it not as formal as that? I mean, I appreciate, you know, people, but do you look for that when you're employing new people?
Well, I think, I mean, obviously I only will employ people in my sort of teams, but so I don't know what everyone else is, but we do generally, when we're interviewing people, it's probably a different conversation, but it is something that we try and find out about that person, and we try and almost talk about our business and what we do and our values, company values, and all of those things that matter to us as a business, and try and then engage with that person to make sure that they feel the same way, because I still feel that, you know, Marmara has grown significantly over the last few years, but we're still quite family orientated. And I think that's what keeps you moving all in the right direction.
Yeah, no, I can see that. And Merin, how about you guys at BAM? We've sort of slightly moved on really a bit. We're talking now around ingraining sustainability into company culture, but also making sure that for your customers, your messaging remains consistent throughout.
Yeah, I think, there's a few points actually on ingraining it in the culture. They all kind of link together actually, because for us anyway, the whole, you know, what I was talking about at the beginning about comms being really challenging, trying to explain things to your customers, because I'm a technical person and I tend to over explain things, or I tend to get too technical. And for a customer, that can be not what they want, and it can get confusing. So ingraining and educating all of the different departments, for example, the marketing department, about what we're doing and why we're doing it, if they've got all the background information, then they can help to find the best way to communicate it to the customer, because that's their area of expertise. So that's another reason why it's so helpful and important to kind of spread that knowledge around the business. You know, I'm here with the technical knowledge, but actually I'm not going to be able to communicate it in the best way to the customer. Our marketing team is. When it comes to communicating it to the customer and putting it at those different touch points, I think sometimes a really simple way to do that is using these kind of certifications and stamps and things. But then that brings up another issue, which Lisa was talking about earlier, about when you're a smaller business and sustainability has always been what you do, and now it's become mainstream and now the bigger businesses are picking up on it, then it's actually much easier for a bigger business with more budget, more resource, to just stick a stamp on something. And quite often, you know, the stamps and the certifications and things are created by organizations which are funded by these massive, by the much bigger businesses, which means that they're created for them. And it means that sometimes, as a smaller business who does things a little bit differently, or is doing something in a more progressive way, or you know, you might be doing something differently and you might not quite fit into the exact certification that's out there, but it's something that the customer can really recognize. And so that's something we really we grapple with it, I suppose, on a daily basis, is figuring out the thing that's going to land the best with the customer, the thing that is actually going to have the best impact as well, because for us it isn't just about driving more sales, it is genuinely about doing the right thing. So we're always trying to find that balance, and that can be a really big challenge. I've sort of gone past all of the last three points there, so I don't know where that brings us to, but those are the things that kind of cropped up as you guys were talking.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's so many issues to cover, really, isn't there? But I it's really interesting, Merin, how you're set up with your sustainability hat on and your technical hat on, and then you relay that to the rest of the organisation for them to then use to communicate in the ways that they need to communicate as part of their job roles. And I wonder if moving forward, that's, you know, a way that brands could adopt, or certainly if they haven't, they're not really in the sustainability kind of area at the moment, they might think about adopting someone like yourself to then, you know, be the champion of it throughout the business, versus Karen, who's trying to get it, you know, embedded into everyone at the outset. You know, there's really different ways of ensuring that that message comes across, because you also brought up, Meryn, rightly, this emotional engagement with customers, you know, and I think that's, it's, you know, we're more discerning, we're more digitally savvy, we're more aware now as consumers. So how do you really engage customers with these environmental issues that are close to you? Are there initiatives and campaigns that you run? And how do they kind of, as you said before, like get under the skin of the, and have more of an impact, not only on the environment, but in terms of against the big, bigger players that you're competing with? Karen, do you?
We're a purely online retailer, and it's always been a big driver of ours to the communication is always key. It's putting a personality with the brand forward to the consumer, and they understand who we are and what we're all about. And customer care has always sat very much at the front of that. We don't hide from anything in terms of, you know, very hard to communicate with. You know, we have phone numbers, live chat, emails, everything to be able to speak to people in the business very easily and readily. But the, we did launch early this year was our what's called One Planet initiative. And that basically was driven more by just trying to tell consumers how to live every day and how, or, you know, nobody's perfect, but just trying to bring it home in terms of real life and what, how everyone is living individually. So we had a One Planet. So we had basically, we've launched it and it's there and on the website and it's being updated with information and news all the time. But we did do an Insta Live session over the month of April for World Earth Day. And we had different sessions each week. The consumer, conscious consumer, we had some brands talking about their philosophy and how, what they're doing within the business. Store and reimagine, repurpose with purpose, and recycle in style. And it was so good to see, you know, actually people talking and asking questions and just learning, really. So I think that is something definitely we'll move forward with and invite people to talk to customers if they want to hear it. If they don't, it's recorded. It's there for people to then be involved with and see it as and when they want. But so that's for us is trying to get those messages to people and not have a flat fronted screen with no personality and no so the consumer doesn't understand who we are as a business and what we're trying to achieve.
Yes. And obviously that was really successful. Meryn, are there things like that you've been doing?
Yeah. It was just that reminded me of a campaign that we ran. We ran it for the first time last year, and we'll be running it again in August, called the Dare to Wear Longer campaign. And the reason we started that campaign was because once we'd done the big kind of LCA measurement, life cycle analysis measurement of our product, of the impacts of our whole life cycle of our products, we realized there was a huge portion of it that was coming from the laundry, which I'm sure Lisa knows more than me about this. And it would actually be interesting to maybe collaborate on this campaign with you guys, because a huge portion of the impact of a garment's life cycle was coming from the way that they launder it. And the great thing about bamboo is it's super absorbent, and so it tends to not get smelly as quickly as kind of synthetic clothing. So we started doing a campaign called Dare to Wear Longer to try and get people to wear their t-shirts for 7 days without washing them at the height of summer, to kind of try and get people into the mind of not, you know, washing a t-shirt every single time you wear it, because the impact that that is having is actually much bigger than you realize. And with the campaign this August, we're going to be trying to collaborate with other brands that are doing kind of good things with laundry. So it would be really interesting to talk to you, Lisa, about that, because I think that's a really important thing that we can do as a brand, is help customers to understand what their impact is and the little changes that they can do that can start to reduce their own impact, even just wearing a t-shirt for a day longer before you wash it.
But I think that's just brilliant, Meryn, and I think it's, you know, it's, we all know about obviously the 5P for the the plastic bag, you know, initiative that was brought in. But it is more of the tactical things, isn't it, that can really have an impact on a consumer, because it's something that you can embrace every day into your life. And also it makes you feel good because you're doing something for the planet. And it also is good for you guys as brands. Lisa, have you got any, you know, there's a collaboration there on the doorstep with BAM for you guys to get involved with. But, you know, they're probably things that you're doing as well, aren't they?
Yeah, we do a lot of collaborations because it just makes sense. It makes sense to support other small brands like ourselves. It makes sense to share our kind of social media platform reach with other small brands. It's pretty much, you know, we'll help you, you help us. We run kind of competitions with similarly minded brands pretty much every month. My digital marketing executive looks after all of those kind of collaborations. And we always support other brands. We'll always put other brands in our email communication, in our blogs, you know, on our social channels. You know, this is all about kind of collaborating together and trying to reach the same people. We're all trying to reach the same people. We're not competing in terms of products. We're just, you know, wanting to tap into people that would be interested in our products. So we work with all sorts of other products who are, you know, have similar values to us. So collaborations, definitely thumbs up. The other thing that we tend to do is we tap into awareness days. It gives us a structure to our kind of promotional calendar. Plastic Free July, Zero Waste Week, Earth Day, National Refill Day, any day that's relevant to our products allows us to talk about the benefits and link them to an environmentally, you know, linked awareness day. There's already chat about these days on social, so we want to be part of that chat, and it would be wrong not to be. So we kind of gear all of our messaging and our promotional discounts or bundles or free product or whatever around environmental days. The other thing that we have found is using influencers. I hate the whole kind of, I'm going to pay you to talk about my brand. We don't do that. We have a lot of mummy bloggers, environmental bloggers, again, small kind of social media accounts that come to us and say, oh my God, I love your product. I'd love to review it for you. And we're like, for sure, here you go. And we send out products for free for people to review. We don't tell them what to say. We just say, use it. You know, here you go, use it. And they can say whatever they want. We did up our game by working with an agency who would put us in contact with people that had a higher kind of level of social media followers. But again, we don't really tell them what to say, and we don't ram the products, you know, through their front door. The products are available for them to choose to sample should they wish. And we work closely with the agency to make sure that those people who wish to use our products and therefore might review them. Again, there's no direct money that goes to these influencers because we don't, you know, we're not paying them to review our products. We're just saying, look, they're available if you'd like to. And, you know, we've had some big names that are spot on for us. Just to throw one name into the pot is Julia Bradbury. Julia Bradbury, she tried our products and she absolutely loved them. And so she kept posting about it on her socials, which we were so grateful for, because for someone else to say something about our products is so much more powerful than us saying, you know, what we say the same things over and over again. When somebody who has, you know, a relevant following absolutely says what we would love her to say and we've not told her to say it, it's, you know, it's just brilliant. And that's what I love, is that kind of very natural and organic way of working with influencers. We don't pay them, we don't send them a script, we just say, look, our product is available should you wish to try it. That I absolutely love. We've just started working with a creative agency, and we've got such an emotional, you know, I absolutely love it, new creative campaign that will be coming out towards the end of the year, that again just taps into our consumers, what we're about as a brand, and also the environment. And it's probably one of the most exciting kind of creative, and probably the only campaign actually that EcoEgg as a brand has embarked on. So I can't wait to kind of share that with you later down the line, as and when we're kind of at that stage. But it's all about tapping into, yeah, the emotional side of why people choose more sustainable products, really.
Yeah. And it's so true. It's that emotional connection that people want. And it's that authenticity that we keep coming back to. One thing I did want to talk to you all about is, and Lisa, you mentioned it earlier, as a company that's owned by private investors, but at both levels, you know, we talk very much about everything that we'd like to do and we'd like to be more sustainable. My children are constantly reminding me of more things that I could be doing. Apparently I'm not doing enough all the time, which is great. And I totally get that. But it's how do you, despite those sort of good intentions, do price and convenience ultimately remain your biggest driver when it comes to actual purchases and buying decisions? And how do you, as brands who are championing sustainability, sort of get over that? And also, as you touched on, Lisa, you know, you're doing everything you can and you've got passionate founders, as have you, Merin, but ultimately there are business decisions that are needed to be made. And how does that balance, can that balance be struck between being sustainable and meeting commercial objectives? So I guess there's sort of two questions in one there, but it's all around sort of price and money, I guess, that's drives a lot of things.
Yeah, it's very hard for us because at the end of the day, well, at the end of every month, you know, we are reporting to investors, and we're lucky that we have investors that are environmentally conscious. They believe in doing the right thing as well, which really does help. Sometimes it's just not commercially possible to always do the right thing. You know, we don't have huge purchasing and buying power because we're a small company. So sometimes if you want an alternative, it's just too expensive and the numbers don't add up. So that just means you have to accept that that route is not possible and you need to, you know, find another route. And therefore it takes quite a lot of time sometimes to make changes. You know, we're in the middle of a couple of projects that, you know, I'm kind of quite impatient over these projects, but it takes a long time to find the right solution when you've got to marry up the environmental side of it, but also it's got to work from a cost point of view, because you know, we're still a commercial business, we still have to report to investors at the end of the day, and you know, we need to make enough money to pay for all of our costs, all of our overhead. So it is really hard. I think that, again, marketing tends to be the the one that always chucks the environmental sustainability word into meetings, and the one that occasionally, you know, oh gosh, you know, it's you banging on about being environmentally friendly again. And you know, that's part of my job role. You know, I look after the brand. I have to be that person that just reminds everybody in every meeting, you know, with every decision, that we really should be looking at what is best for the planet, not just what is best for our, you know, purses. But it is really hard.
Yeah. And Karen, how at Amara do you do that?
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, I think even if you can't do something today because of cost restrictions, things are changing and moving in the right direction in terms of the products that are coming in at a more reasonable price to make it cost effective and to meet your sort of budgets, as it were. I think we've all said it, you know, it's not a quick, easy fix, any of this. It is. But as long as you have got the intentions and you are almost on a daily basis investigating if you can find a better option to do it in a more sustainable fashion, then that's what you've got to do. And I think that is the complete ethical thing to do. But, you know, don't get me wrong, I'm constantly battling for budgets to make sure that we can get that, if we need it, extra money to make those changes. And a lot of it is not even monetary. It's just sort of things like changing your electricity provider. It doesn't cost any more, but someone's actually got to sit there, speak to them, do all the sort of donkey work, really. Yeah. And for us, in terms of the consumers themselves, they're the ones, actually, they can shop on our site through our sort of drop-down filter systems. So they're almost going to, if they're in that mindset and they only want to shop from a charitable source or a sustainable source or handcrafted, if it's available in that category they're looking at, whether that's bath towels or, you know, lampshades, they can filter those products. So they're not going to see products that might distract them from their cause, if you see what I mean. So they will, if they want to, they'll only see products that are eco-friendly or handcrafted or recycled. So that they haven't got the distraction of other products. They just can shop by those pure, their ethical feelings towards something they want to purchase. So, yeah, I think it's just, you know, getting things right. And not, it's not going to happen overnight, but as long as we're all sort of making decisions on a daily basis and thinking about things once, twice and three times, then, you know, it's going to get better.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. But a couple more questions I just wanted to touch on. How do you guys measure sustainability in terms of your sort of business, you know, and things that you're doing? Are there measurement tools or things that you use internally to measure what you're doing?
From our point of view, our sort of, not a, a tool, but for us, it is about the consumer and their feedback as much as anything else. We basically buy and do what our customers want us to do within reason, obviously. So we review all of that customer feedback that we get every day on all different types of subjects. That's what we use, you know, FIFO, but also on a personal level, the staff in the customer care team are physically speaking to our customers and asking them those questions and getting them to answer whether or not what they think of the packaging and all those other touch points. But yeah, so they basically, anyone that leaves us feedback, whether it is to say the colour of a product isn't as it looks on the website, that is automatically handed over to the correct department, in that case the studio, who will then call in the product and have it reshot. So we're always feeding on the back of what our customers are telling us, and we can't always make it right. We can't, you know, we struggle because of the diversity of product, of making packaging that is going to be 100% recyclable or sustainable within a short period of time. But yeah, we're just constantly trying to keep up with it all and make those changes, and to be as transparent and honest as well with our customers, so about everything that we do, because, you know, there's no point in making false claims. You know, they're going to come back and bite you for sure. But also it's important, you know, that's how we've always done business, is having very strong customer care and making sure that they are at the heart of what we do and our business.
Yes. And in terms of sustainability, measuring your progress on that, Karen, do you have anything specifically around that that you do?
So at the moment, we're just having our carbon footprint measured. So, and again, all these things are very new to me as slightly older, shall I put it politely, but just within our business alone, I'm not talking about from a personal level. But yeah, we are having everything assessed in all different aspects of the business. And once that piece of work is done, then we'll have a measurement, plan of action of where we're going to be circa 10 years, 20 years.
Yeah.
That again, you know, because of all the areas that we deal with, whether it is a tech company, whether it is, you know, DHL, all of those need to be measured individually to come up with what basically is and what we're going to do about our carbon footprint ultimately.
And do you think there should be an industry standard in specifically in retail? Do you think that's easy to deploy, or should we all be looking for certain measures like your carbon footprint when we're working out what brands we want to engage with?
Yeah, and I think you can do that as far as I'm aware. But I think there is also a lot of people that are jumping on that bandwagon, whether it's companies, because, you know, again, doing a bit of investigating around this, you know, there's plenty of companies out there that will say that myself as our business, we can take it to them and they will offset our carbon footprint, which is not really very, well, it's not scientifically backed at all. So, yeah, it's cutting through all of that to make sure that what you're doing is scientifically true and honest and realistic.
Yes. And you know, one size doesn't always fit all, does it, for different brands at different levels? So it's not fair to sort of compare in that
it's
way.
It's very hard to compare one business with another, definitely.
Yeah. And in terms of measurement, Lisa, for you at EcoEgg, you know, how do you look to understand, you know, what your customers are doing? And again, from a sustainability perspective, are there any measures that you have that you refer to check in with what you're doing?
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, I think the answer in terms of a, you know, particular measure or number or whatever, the answer is no, we don't track anything in that level of detail, because it's really hard in order to do so, because there's so many elements that kind of make up, you know, the term sustainability. We tend to do kind of more social listening. We're members of a lot of Facebook groups that chat about zero waste, that chat about, you know, eco-parenting. There's so many out there. We just listen. We don't often actually even engage, but we just listen to what the chat is out there amongst people. Obviously, we read a lot of articles that are relevant. We track customer feedback via FIFO, via Amazon reviews, Ocado reviews, Waitrose reviews. And we do send out customer surveys to our own kind of email database to check what features of our products they feel are most important, because we kind of tick a lot of boxes, but we don't know always, or I suppose we do know, but we don't always know which box is relevant to which group of people. So, you know, we have a kind of skin claim, but a skin claim might not be relevant to somebody who wants to reduce plastic. So we tick both of those boxes, but the way we communicate to those different groups might be different. So I think having something that is recognised within the industry would be really good. And I think that's where the Good Housekeeping Institute tried to come in with their Getting Greener endorsement, which is, you know, this is a recognisable organisation that people have known for years, you know, in terms of product performance, now taking more of a kind of green stance. And so we felt it was important to have something like that against our core product. Also recognisable bodies like Allergy UK, which is relevant to us, FSC, in terms of, you know, sustainably sourcing your paper and your cardboard. There are some kind of industry recognised stamps, but something that incorporates environmentally friendly or natural or sustainable, because those terms aren't definable, it's really difficult to have like one badge that or one stamp gives you that authority. So you have to be more specific. You have to kind of say, you know, this is endorsed by this society or this charity or this environmental organization, or we donate whatever percentage of our profits to these good causes. And it's I think it's very hard to have a kind of standard, and as you said before, you know, it means different things to different products and different companies and different brands.
And of course, then you lose that emotional engagement, don't you, if you're not being sort of relevant to what your specific consumers are looking for. Meryn, I can see that you've joined us again, and I'm delighted. Apologies for the internet connection. We're just sort of finishing up really, and we've been talking about measuring sort of sustainability and what the future holds, I guess, for sustainability in the short term. You know, should there be an industry standard across retail? I just wondered if you sort of wanted to come in with any thoughts on that.
Sure, yeah, apologies. Internet troubles for dropping out there. But I mean, it's interesting listening to what you're saying. I mean, the one that pops to mind is B Corp, and that's something that we're in the process of applying for at the moment, is B Corp certification. And that's the only one that I've really seen that I feel like covers almost everything about a business. Again, it's taken us a year and a half to complete the impact assessment, because it's so thorough. But it's also really difficult because it's kind of, if you're a smaller business, you quite often don't have some of the things in place that bigger businesses would. So in some ways it's a really good, gives you a really good idea of what you should be focusing on. But in some ways it's also really difficult because it wasn't quite designed for you. But yeah, I do think that B Corp is probably becoming one of the really widely recognized stamps of a sustainable business that is kind of quite general. It's not specific to clothing or specific to whatever. I think there's like B Corp banks now, and
across sectors.
Quite interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. And sort of fast forward, I guess, final question to all of you, you know, 2-3 years time, what do you think sustainability in retail will look like? I mean, obviously we hope that there are more brands doing more things in terms of materials and supply chains. But is there anything that you would like to kind of call out on this call that, you know, you see happening in the next couple of years? Karen, anything from Amara or anything you're focusing on specifically?
The biggest thing for us at the moment, which is what we're doing for the first time, is creating and being involved with the Modern Slavery Act, which is a government-led and it's a very important piece of legislation which covers timber regulations, slavery, all sorts of different aspects of how a business should be conducted. So that and our and carbon footprint issues are both things that we're working on at the moment. And I think it's really empowered people within our business anyway. I'm really really pleased and impressed by how many within the company have just embraced it and said, yes, definitely, this is what we should be doing, and have come up with suggestions and ideas on either different charities or brands that we don't sell that are industry specific to us and would work really well, give our clients the offering that they want. The more that we talk about this, the better it's going to be. Everyone does need to address it. And I feel very positive about the next few years, actually. Every brand that we speak to, as part of the sort of modern slavery statement, we have to go down that supply chain that I was talking about earlier. And even not companies that we sell, i.e. products, but actually agencies that we use, whether that is the couriers, the big boys, the DHLs of the world, but also smaller companies that we work with that you wouldn't know we worked with them because it's all behind the scenes sort of agency or tech based. But yeah, actually going and speaking to them and saying, look, you know, we're going on this journey and we really want you to come with us, but we need you to comply with all of this because we're not going to turn the tap off and say we're not going to work with you anymore at the moment. But you need to know that ultimately,
yeah,
if you want to work with us in 2 years' time, this is where you need to be as well.
And they're obviously receptive to that, which is great to
hear.
Yeah,
it's really positive. I mean, lots of people are very frightened by it because it's a big piece of work and there's lots of very lengthy statements and people change, getting very nervous about it. A change, and they worry about the cost and all of those sorts of aspects. But yeah, and everyone's just so busy in life as well. Say, I can't afford to have anyone look at that or do that. But we all need to. I've seen a very positive improvement. And I think that will only continue.
Well, and I think you've all highlighted so brilliantly that brands really can't ignore this growing climate conversation. You know, and some of the things we've talked about today, you know, how to help consumers make changes to their lifestyle to have an immediate impact, you know, and they can be small changes, but actually they can then have a big impact, and it sort of sets the precedent for future and future generations. Ladies, it's absolutely been a pleasure. We're up to an hour now, and there's so much that we've talked about. We could have gone on and on, but really just wanted to say thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate you being FIFO customers and using all our products to help you gain insight on what your customers are actually talking about and helping you grow your business. So all it remains to say is thanks very much. And for all our audience who've been kindly listening, please join into our next Spotlight series, which will be sustainability in travel. So thanks to everyone for listening and taking part, and we'll talk to you again soon. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Thanks very much, Nicola.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.